Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And well, what do we have here? Does it look like an acid bubble? How was the timing of the end of last week's shows with the volatility? Bubba knew something. Are we going to finally admit to an acid bubble? Does the Federal Reserve do something? Finally, is it not amazing that, of course, we have warned forever that when you build a house of cards, one little blow of wind will knock it over. And I don't know that this is the windstorm that's going to knock it completely down, but I will say to you this, that certainly based on the action, based on what's going on, that the top is certainly in. And again, remember, just because the top is in doesn't mean we're going right to the bottom. Sell-offs, bear markets, and the like don't go straight down, just like markets don't go straight up. Remember, if we look at different patterns, we have, you know, steady movement, steady up, steady down. Now, down usually creates more price volatility, you know, going down, and wider days. But typically, even when we're going down, you will get trade, you will get action. Whereas when you're going up, you get that steady grind, you know, that torturous grind in a straight up market. But you would think, you know, that going down, again, everybody's worried. And this is where you have to sit back and say to yourself, Bubba's told me this forever. I don't have to panic. You know, I got so many calls over the weekend about should I sell everything? Do I need to dump? And I go, no. First of all, why dump when you can hedge? Okay. But second of all, you'll have opportunities. This is the emotional part of trading, the fear meets greed department. And now we're in fear. And you'll see some of this, but you'll also see the dip buyers stepping in again and trying to buy. Remember, let's think about what happens. When the market's going up, they go up and they go up, you know, they typically dribble up. Now, obviously, we have some explosive moves up, which I think we'll have coming soon. But we typically dribble and grind higher. And let's say the average range, you know, let's say 100 points in the Dow, which is really nothing. So, again, people get excited about the number, but it means nothing. So let's say the average, so it'll just grind. And it'll grind you, and you say, wow, there's no business, because it just kind of grinds higher and buyers keep stepping in. And mostly the sellers are taking profit. They're, you know, you got a few taking a stab at the short side always, but basically it's a, you know, a revolving buyers come in, sellers take a little profit, more buyers step in, more sellers take a little profit, and they just kind of grind higher. When the markets are going down, panic steps in, weak hands dump, and strong hands pick up the pieces, okay? But what happens is you'll see wider swings, because when the sellers take over, really what happens is the strong hands realize that panic is setting in. So when we know there's panic setting in, why not try to wait? And they'll wait longer, but then what'll happen is they'll allow the sellers to get into what they call oversold. They'll let the sellers really dig themselves into a hole. And then, of course, new money steps in. Buyers will step in. And then, of course, what happens? The shorts you have to cover and you get a short squeeze, which will create huge swings. Now, the first thing we have to decipher is this a real sell-off? Is this the start of the correction? Now, we're at that 10% level, but we could certainly easily, and we've seen this before, go right back up. I mean, the Russell last October was down almost 15% or maybe 20 and ended up making new highs and in a rather quick pace. So I do believe that is in, and I don't predict, but I do believe the top is in the market, okay? And I do believe that you want to be a seller of every reasonable rally, okay? That's really what I look at is where are we in our cycle? And I believe that you want to be an overall seller of every solid rally because I expect to see some wicked rip your face off. Oh my God, we're going to the moon rallies. And you now have to think of it from the other side, as they say, from the dark side. Let them rally, let them rally, let them rally, pick a level and then say, okay, I'm willing to take a little bit of a position here and I'm going to work it from the short side. But you don't have to be in a hurry, and you certainly don't want to chase them down, okay? You certainly don't want to puke out everything here. You want to look and evaluate how is your exit going to be, where is my exit going to be, and if you're hedging with me and Badger, then you're not really worried. You're actually loving the sell-off. Why? Because you're accumulating cash to buy more equities. Now, you think about it this way. What is a better scenario? Puking out your... Well, let's say, even if you sold out here, okay, or Wednesday, is it better to sell out and be sitting in cash with no chance to enhance yield, okay, waiting, trying to pick a bottom to come back in and buy, because that's what we do? Or is it better to stay in the market, be hedged, so not worrying about the downside, but knowing when your equities get cut by 20%, that you've actually now accumulated cash in your account, okay, to buy more stock. In the meantime, depending on how long it lasts, you've still collected your dividends, you've still done everything you do, but you've never had to get out, and you never have to worry about making that decision of when is the time to get out or get in. If you just stay in with a hedged position, then you never have to get out. Now that, to me, that makes more sense. I don't know about you, but me, that seems about the way to go. I mean, that's what I do, but I don't see why you would ever want to get out if you don't have to. And again, by hedging your portfolio, you don't have to get out. You can stay in and let the markets do what they're going to do. And then again, like I said, you know, if you were hedged Apple, for example, and you were hedged it from 125 and now it's 105, you've now accumulated in your options position enough cash to cover that. And in theory, you could come in and take that extra cash and now buy more stock in Apple and then hedge more. You see, using the hedge gives you a better opportunity to compound it. Okay, and that's what it's all about. But anyways, if you've got questions, you want to check it out, email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org. I want to remind you, everybody, Thinkorswim, they have daily swim lessons. They really do a great job over there. They've got stuff going all over the place from like 10:30 in the morning, basically all day, where you can get some education about their webinars. And of course, we are now very heavily involved in Canada with TD Waterhouse and Thinkorswim in Canada, and I can certainly help you get taken care of there. But you do have to email me if you want to get my rates, because I get special rates that nobody gets in the business. So make sure that you shoot me an email at bubba@thebubbashow.org. And if you are not checking out thebubbashow.org every day and reading the articles that we are posting every day, and you haven't joined the member site yet, again, another mistake, because again, I am bringing in information from all over the world to help keep you updated on what's going on. But for now, I'm going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. Make sure you check out thesportingedge.net as we get ready for football season. And most of all, go get a cup of coffee. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Stay with me now.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and my stranger, my friend, one of my favorite people in the world from Lila Max Media and the Ka-Ching Report, Jane King. What's up, Jane King?
Well, hey, Todd, I'm doing great. I'm glad it's Friday. What a week this has been. What 2 weeks this has been on Wall Street. It's been crazy.
It's been, well, and I think there's more of it to come. And I think you and I kind of addressed this about a month ago, and we said this is the kind of action to expect. And that was first when some of the troubles started to show up in China. And of course, you made a very good point. You said, look, I'm investing for the long term, so I'm not worried. I'm not happy, but I'm not worried. And I think one of the big problems that we see when markets do kind of what they did in the last couple of weeks, and we start to see some of these big gyrations, is investors who really shouldn't be looking at the day-to-day tape are getting concerned, which obviously fuels the fire to get more out. But in your opinion, shouldn't investors just kind of just sit on the side? You're investing, and there is a definition of, you know, kind of holding. I don't say you should do nothing, but if you're buying good, solid companies and you're buying good, solid businesses, you should just kind of stick with them and figure that they're going to work themselves out. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, is to pick a company that, you know, has good management, that's on the right side of macroeconomic trends, you know, that is innovating and being run well, and in those cases, those are going to be your winners. And, I mean, it's still in China. It's my kid's college fund. They're 6 and 18. So I'm hoping 10 years from now, China will recover. But it's, I mean, it could take a while. I mean, this was painful. This was very hard. It's a huge correction. The stock market was way up in China over the past year. They're going through all kinds of problems now. They're clearly slowing down. And the manufacturing data out today, you know, just further confirming that. And, you know, it's going to be a rough couple of years. But I'm just going to look at it as you know, we put money in every month. It's automatically withdrawn, and we're going to keep adding to it. And hopefully that'll be enough to cover their expenses.
Well, look, I mean, the bottom line is if somebody is, you know, for example, you know, 20 years old today, and you put away, I think it's $100 a month or $200 a month. I forget what the number is, but when you're 60, it's worth over $1 million based on normal things that have happened over years. Because this is not the first time we've seen a market melt a little bit. And again, you really can't call this a melt. We're still only about 1,300 points from the all-time high in the Dow. It's not like we're going down. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions that people see now is because the numbers are so much bigger. You know, we're at an $18,000 Dow. You know, 180 point move is no different than an $18 stock going down 10 cents. So you wouldn't think about that. So why is somebody concerned about 100 points or 180 points in the Dow Jones, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you start seeing like 250, 300 point drops, you know, you start to, you know, get a little nervous. But I mean, it's always, you know, these things, the markets are so psychological. And it's always, when we go through these times, it's hard to imagine things ever improving. But they always do, you know, and as long as you're, you know, diversified and have good companies, you're going to end up being a winner. So that's just, you know, you got to have to get some white knuckles and just ride through this.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, it just goes back to if you're investing in solid companies, and Netflix is not a solid company. I mean, they're not a bad company. I'm not saying that you should not have any money in Netflix. I'm just saying that Netflix is not, you know, a General Electric, where it's going to be steady and they're going to be in business and they're not going a lot of places. And I think the biggest thing is that you have to kind of sit back and take a deep breath and kind of relax and say, okay, where am I at? And I'm investing money that I can afford, because you never want to invest money that you're going to possibly need to pay the rent, correct?
Well, yeah, no, that would be a very bad idea. Yeah, you kind of need to take care of all those monthly expenses. Make sure you got that first, because, I mean, these things take time. You know, it might take a couple of years for an investment to pay off, and you're going to have to pay the rent for that. So, yeah, definitely whatever you have above and beyond your monthly expenses is what you should be investing. And you're talking about Netflix. Interesting, because we saw the media stocks go off yesterday. So Disney, you know, there was a Bernstein comment yesterday about Disney talking about how, you know, they're going to have to readjust the business and their evaluations of the business because of the changing media landscape, which, you know, up until this point, I mean, all I've heard was Netflix. I was going to be, you know, taking your cable, and people were cord cutting. And Netflix is hammered yesterday, too. I mean, it was just broad-based, kind of didn't make a lot of economic sense, some of the stocks that were falling, but it was just one of the days. I mean, everybody wanted out, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, I mean, again, it's natural market movement, and when you have a Fed-induced rally, which is what we've had, there mm-hmm. has not been real growth, you're going to get these types of bubbles. I mean, this, you know, nobody wants to ever say it's an asset bubble, but it is an asset bubble because the markets have been built on artificial money. I mean, you know, they've been built on cheap money and on people borrowing to invest because of this and that and the other thing. And of course, you know, we see that again, even in the farming community, which is part of your background as well. I mean, listen, the grain prices have gotten hammered, and they're not hammered for any other reason that the dollar has become too strong. And of course, you know, the overall demand for commodities is lessened right at the moment. So of course, when you work in that field, pardon the pun, it's a supply demand based business. Is that not correct?
Well, oh yeah, I mean it is, and it's it's not just the grain markets. I mean, oil. We're on our longest weekly losing streak since 1986. I mean, you know, Ronald Reagan was president the last time we've seen oil fall like this. So clearly, this is, you know, China related, and as you mentioned, an asset bubble. This is just totally normal. Things are correcting. It's painful. It's hard, but it's very much expected and normal, and probably healthy.
And just, you know, we don't talk politics usually, but I'm just curious as to your take as to the Trump boy and as to what's going on with Hillary Clinton.
Well, Donald Trump has been fascinating to watch this whole thing. I watched the speech that he gave, or I guess it was a town hall meeting technically in New Hampshire earlier this week, and was just riveted. I mean, the guy is so interesting. He's funny. He's got a lot of energy. The people were so excited, and there was so much energy in that room. And I really kind of, you know, remind me a little bit of 2008 and Barack Obama. I mean, how much energy and excitement that he generated at that time. And it feels like Trump's doing the same thing. I mean, they were yelling, he was responding, answering questions. And, you know, I kind of, like, when I was watching the whole thing, and then just as I do research for work every day, I come across so many stories about Donald Trump. And they're everything from, like, you know, stuff that has nothing to do with politics. Like, what did he do with his hair and all this stuff? And I'm like, there's just such public interest in him. I mean, and it's not dying. And, you know, really, there's been a couple of opportunities where if he was going to, you know, just fail and just bomb, it would have happened. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a Republican nominee. So, you know, it's interesting to hear what he has to say. I would like to hear more details, but I think he's starting to form those. So I'm still open-minded. I still want to hear what everybody has to say about this. Of course, I watched the debate a couple of weeks ago. That was also very interesting. Hillary Clinton, well, you know, I mean, I've always felt like ever since the story started that she's been very, hasn't wanted to answer any questions about it, and I felt like that was just, it was very much like, just talk to the hand. I'm not going to answer any questions about this important national security issue. And I think that that did not serve her well. I think she felt like things were going to just go away. You know, she was playing like it was 1995. And people just, you know, they felt like they were deserving of some answers. And imagine, I mean, if she would be actually president. I mean, when she's not president, she doesn't want to answer any questions. When she would actually be president. So I think that really hurt her. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be an interesting. I was back in Indiana last weekend. Somebody asked me who's going to be the Republican nominee. And I was like, I have no idea. So it's fun. I'll just sit back and watch it all.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be entertaining. And, you know, I think that what I'm happy to see about Trump is just that, you know, everybody always says, well, he's not doing it the right political way. Well, what is the right way? I mean, certainly our government is way too big right now. And no, I don't think anybody does it the right way right now. And again, I'm concerned. I think that's another part playing in this economy. But do you look for some improvement, or do you think we have to flush a little bit more first?
Well, I don't know, it seems like, you know, take Apple yesterday, 20% normal volume. I mean, in down day. I mean, that tells me more down is to come. I mean, will it be next week? Will it be September? I mean, maybe we'll take a little breather here for a little bit, but I think we've got more downside to come. I think the question is, are these dips for buying or are the rallies for selling? Something to ponder.
We will answer that next week when Jane King returns back on her regular schedule, because I blew it. I overslept one time. But anyway, this has been Jane King.
It happens.
This has been Jane King. The Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media. You can catch her on air from coast to coast. Make sure you find the local carrier that carries her. Thank you, Jane King. It's always great to have you on.
Thanks, Todd.
This is Jane King. This is The Bubba Show. We're going to stop by here for a break, and we'll be back right after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here in a couple of minutes.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. So you made a little bit of money in this horrid economy only to find that the Fed has more or less outlawed saving. So into the treacherous waters of the stock market bubble you go. But how to make a little money without too much risk of losing it all? Check out WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who opens a very real window into his main account, updating his subscribers on the facts of and the reasoning behind all his market moves. Follow along on paper or with real money and see what happens at WallStreetWindow.com.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's been a while. We've been both traveling and not around, but we miss our buddy Mike McClone from ETF Securities. What's up, Mr. McClone?
Well, hello, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, listen, you know, you're a regular here. You guys have the best products, and we'll talk a little bit about that today in the ETF space for what you guys do. I think that there's none better. In fact, everybody who asks me, I'm a big fan of silver here and have been, and I go, you got to get SIVR, which is one of your products. But first of all, kudos and hats off to you. You have said, and you stayed the course since for the last couple of months on, kind of what we were looking at and what some of the problems were going to be. And of course, on Thursday, we saw a little bit of ugliness. Again, I don't ever call it a final score, and we'll see how it plays out. But certainly, I think that the highs right now are certainly in the markets. What are you seeing? And what are you thinking?
Well, I have to agree, and I think that's, I appreciate you mentioning it, but you and I have actually agreed on most of these things that have been happening. We've just been warning people about them, and we're not doom and gloomers. Both of us, I think, are more optimistic people. We're just realistic, and that's what I feel sometimes difficult, but we have to talk about what we see, certainly, as research analysts, and what I see is this is probably just the beginning. I hope not, but we have to, face reality and adjust our portfolios and our investments accordingly. And that means diversify, cash is okay, precious metals are good, and the bond market still is attractive. And I think the biggest issue is what's really happening is realistically we're seeing a normalization of volatility and returns in the equity market. This is nothing big yet because you look at the VIX, which is a volatility index, is at 19%. It's just, that's the historic average, realistically. It just spent the longest period in my known record at well below, hovering at 12 and 13%. And you and I have mentioned this before. These things always mean revert, and that's all we're doing at the moment. The question is how long does it last and what duration, and for now, which just be careful and be safe.
Well, and of course, you and I do talk like that. And you're on top of it. Our only disagreement is that, you kind of support the Fed and I say they stink. But other than that, we've been, I say it out loud to everybody. It's not like, I'm high, shh, I'm on my show. Listen, I think they've done a rotten job, but it doesn't matter. The bottom line is that we have not seen true growth in the markets that you and I both can agree on. We've not seen a lot of great improvement. And the, as you used to coin the phrase, the unintended consequences are finally becoming consequences. And, you know, there's talk, you know, they kept saying, oh, the Fed's going to raise in September. The Fed's going to raise in September. I go, I don't think so. And now it's the Fed's going to raise in December. I don't think so. My opinion is we're at least 2016 before we see any rate increase. What about you?
Well, I think a rate increase because of really, the traditional sources of demand pull inflationary forces is still a dream. And I think what you mentioned now is something that really we need to accentuate. And this is one thing I've always liked to do is analyze what the academics and leaders are doing and saying, and then use rational decision-making to really decide what that means. So first of all, let me give you the background. From a lot of my opinion this year started with there was an absolute consensus last year that bond yields would go up and the commodities would go up. This was the beginning of 2014, and that consensus was completely wrong. So to me, my thought is, okay, when the smart people, so-called smart people, get it wrong, what does that mean? And what's really happened this year that's really scared me is some of these signals we're getting from Chinese authorities. These draconian efforts that they are announcements that they made to support the stock market, if you want a clear red light signal that something's wrong, is when non-market oriented political leaders do things like that. And that is a good indication that something's wrong. And then you add up all the other iterations. The commodity market's collapsing. Chinese PMIs are weaker. Chinese auto sales. And that, to me, is just what's happening. The thing is, you know, these things happen everywhere. And now it's just coming back to a little bit of reality that we're basically in a structural shifting lower of the Chinese economic growth model. And now we're also in a position where we have, okay, yes, the U.S. is a great shining star, but reality needs to come back. And my biggest fear is reality in the U.S. equity market, where we all have known it's had the longest period in history without one of the longest periods in the NASDAQ, history of NASDAQ, without a recent correction. And right now, this is just a correction. And at some point, it'll be a bear market, and then who knows how far that'll go. But hopefully, this will be just a good opportunity to, for rational, though those of us waited, to get properly invested in. You know, I've been saying you're supposed to be, still, I'll say you're supposed to be overweight bonds, underweight stocks, and overweight precious metals, and still stick with that mode.
Well, I mean, you know, you are, obviously, you're a great analyst. You really understand it, and you do this, and this is one of the things that people don't understand, and investors, you do your analyzation without an emotion, without trying to forecast. You're saying this is what seeing, and for example, one of the things you look at, you know, gold has a likely date with 1300. Okay, so tell us why.
Yeah, I put that out this week, and it's rare I put out something that I stick my neck out that much. But sometimes, in my position, when you really feel strongly about it, you have to do it. You have to stick your neck out. And I put that out this week, and it got some pretty good coverage. And here's why. First of all, the gold futures are in backwardation. Now, by backwardation, what that means is the further out future price is at a lower price than the front future. And that's okay in something like crude oil. It's usually a supply-demand issue. But gold is a currency. It virtually never happens. In fact, it's happened rarely. And the last time it happened was at the end of 2013. And gold went from a price of $11.90 to $13.80 or so in a few months. So it's basically a sign of pretty substantial supply-demand imbalance in the gold market. And then you look at what happened in July. It just was almost a historic signs of oversold. Now, you and I talked. It was kind of hard. And I always, one thing I mentioned, always have to mention, sometimes the hardest positions are the ones that really make you think, really double-guess them. But, you know, open interest had increased substantially as the market went down. You know, what that means is there's new shorts getting in the market. There was massive outflows in ETFs. Sentiment had just reached, you know, you lick your finger and lift it up and say, okay, is this more bearish than it really needs to be? And that's basically what happened. And so I think in a normal market, you kind of swing back the other way. 1300 is the high for the year. We printed that level in January. We don't put targets on the market, but I think it's just very likely you go back and test that resistance in a normalization of what's happening. And that's just, you know, we got so far extreme on the downside in bears, it's just likely we all swing back to the other side of the boat and test the upper side. And that's still nothing really new in the gold market. It's really not a new bull market, which at some point I expect it to come. It's just reverting back to the upper end of the range, and those are the main reasons why.
No, and I agree with that. Look, I mean, you know, one of the things I look at as a trader, Okay, now I guess you could call me an analyst, but I'm not really. I mean, I'm a, you know, I'm a guy who speaks what I think, you know, wherever I'm at. And, you know, I saw, and I see it in the entire commodity space, really a market that has been way overdone to the downside. Now, it doesn't mean we can't go lower. I certainly would never say that, but certainly hard assets like gold, when it was down around 1070, 1080, and I don't think that anybody should have bought it there. I said, watch and see. I thought my first key level was 1100, and we went through there, and then I thought the next key level was 1140, and now we're through there. And, you know, I do think you're probably right that it probably has a date with 1300, because, again, when you overfloat one side of the boat, you know, typically you're going to run out of sellers or buyers, and there's going to have to be some, as you like to call it, mean reversion, but also typically, as you and I both know from being in this business for, you know, 60 years combined, that they always go one way too fast and too far.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. So let's look at overall on the year to date. The Bloomberg Commodity Index, which is one of the broadest measures of commodity index, it's down 15%, but the Bloomberg Precious Metals Index is only down 3%. So they've been actually trading very well. They're just being dragged down by everything else. And it's just a question of when we revert and recover. And I think this is where we have to bring the Fed into the play. And one thing I have really been characterizing with the Fed is very similar to what we said earlier in the program. To me, I think what's happening with the Fed, what the trend in the Fed tightening expectations this year, which has been the major drag on gold, has been very similar to that trend we saw last year, where beginning of the year, it's everybody said bond yields are going to go up. Now, so far this year, everybody said, they don't say the Fed, you know, it's not a hypothetical statement that if they're going to tighten, they say when. To me, that's one of the big things that might get taken away. And that's one of the biggest drivers of weakness in gold and strength in the dollar is the fact that everybody's just assumed the Fed's going to tighten. We've all expected it. It's priced in the market, and it's just starting to be taken away, similar to what we had last year when all the people were wrong at the beginning of the year. And right now, in this environment, this is the wrong thing for the Fed to tighten. And even they do, they still might tighten their academics. That still might be a great opportunity for gold buyers because it could be a misfire. Imagine if they tighten and then have to go revert back to QE, like that's what the ECB did just 4 years ago, 2011.
Well, like I said, I think they've misfired the entire, every shot they've made. And again, I still haven't decided in the first one in 08, but since then, every shot has been a misfire. And I would certainly expect them to make an abundance of more mistakes, because to me, again, you cannot run a business, which the economy is a business. You cannot run it out of a textbook. You have to be able to and be willing to roll with the times and roll with what's going on, instead of letting the other people, or the big, in this case, the banks and the big traders, dictate what your policy should be. I believe that they were intimidated and they were filled with fear, worrying about strictly the stock markets, when the truth of the matter is that the stock market only affects probably 6 or 7% of the people in the entire universe. So again, it's a problem, but that's the way it goes. And we're going to see markets trade. Listen, you go back in history to any market, these problems are not unusual. The market will break. The market will come back at some point, and we will always, as you like to use the term, normalization. But there's something that hasn't been under real normalization over this year, basically, and that is silver. But when we come back, I want you to go through what you're seeing with silver, because one of the things that I'm concerned about, I like silver, but one of the things I'm concerned about is, you know, it is a, not only is it a precious metal, so to speak, but it's also an industrial metal. So when we come back from the break, Mike McClone from ETF Securities is going to talk to us about SIVR and silver in general, because again, this is the place that has by far the best ETFs, because they understand the commodity space, or in their case, the metal space. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend and one of the best analysts on the street, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. Mike, I know we were talking during the break, and I wanted you to answer silver, but I know you had another comment in the wake, so please feel free to go ahead. This is open forum for Mike McClone, ETF Securities. Go ahead.
Well, you said something that really hit home for me, and I think it's the way you said it that makes a lot of sense. The economy is a business. And we all know businessmen. A lot of us run companies or have family and friends that do. And they're generally, they know, they might not be the best academics. They might not know the best, most in the world about, you know, economic history, but they know how to run a business. And that's one problem with the Fed. They're academics. They're not business people. They're not hedge fund managers who really, their hedge fund managers are paid to really anticipate the future. The, you know, they're academics and they're really focusing on the past. And that's one big difference that's you and I think sometimes that's where we create and get the opportunities. But I think that's a good thing to always remember and try to keep in mind when we're trying to assess Fed, you know, decisions, what they're making. But now you mentioned about silver. One thing about silver is, first of all, our product, SIVR, I have to admit, it's basically the most cost-effective out there for 30 basis points, which effectively means if you hold $1,000, that's going to cost you $3 a year. It's actually 30 cents a year to hold. For 30 basis points, you can hold silver. That's it. And you get the exact spot return in the silver price. Not like anything else, like crude oil and thing where you still have to use a future and you have to roll futures and everything. This is physical silver. But the thing that's really interesting about silver, first of all, I like to, and I've been watching a lot, is the gold-silver ratio. That's gold divided by silver. And silver right now is, the ratio right now is 75 or so, which is historically very high, which means silver is very cheap and gold is rather expensive. First of all, when that ratio goes up like that, it's usually a good indication of the demand for gold, which is, you know, the savers asset, and silver, it's more the industrial asset. So it's an indication of what's been happening globally. But it also indicates silver is rather cheap and attractive. So I've been watching lately is for a divergence. And so far this year, silver has been the best performing precious metal. So let's look at year to date. Silver's down about 2%, 1.5%, and gold's down about 3%. So it's been showing a pretty substantial, strong divergence. Silver's reached some pretty substantial low levels at $15 an ounce, and it looks to me like it's just very attractive. Also, you look at demand for silver has been, you know, elastic, very responsive. So like silver coins, the sale, a purchase of silver coins are off the charts, all-time records. To give you an example, right now the U.S. Mint is on pace to sell 45 million silver coins. That's what they sold last year. Actually on pace to sell more this year. And they have to source all their silver from U.S. sources. And the U.S. only produces 35 million ounces a year. You also look at demand globally. The Indian imports of silver have been shocking this year. They're running, almost taking down one-third of the total annual supply of silver, almost 300 million ounces. Really why? It's hard to say, but, you know, there's a lot of signs that there's that response to demand for silver is coming. And one thing that's a key thing about silver is always remember, it is also the same word in many languages used. Silver is synonymous with currency. Historically, it is the currency. A lot of our coins in this country pre-1964 still contain silver. And so if you ever see currency volatility, currency volatility, silver is one of the main places to go in combination with gold.
You know, I agree with you. And listen, I think silver is a great. It is like a currency. In fact, in my opinion, it's more of a currency than gold is. And you know, everybody talks about gold, but silver is actually just my opinion. But are you concerned because of the industrial production that's falling down that might hurt the value of silver?
Oh, sure. I'm concerned about it, but there's levels to be concerned. So if you look at the gold-silver ratio, when silver made that peak at 50 in 2011, the gold-silver ratio dropped down to 30. And yeah, that silver was just pretty darn expensive there. And now I see silver and gold-silver ratio at 74. It's just historically very cheap. It's the highest level it's been. You know, in 2008, the peak was around 84. So it could get a little bit cheaper versus gold, but relative to gold, sure, we can see the industrial demand might hurt, but one of the key sources of demand for silver is for electronics, and I just don't think the world's going backwards on IT and electronics. I mean, smartphones, computers, laptops, everything, solar panels, that might slow down, but it's just going to be a blip. And, you know, you look at it relatively, historically, the mean is like 60 or 50 or so in that range, so at these levels, it's very attractive. Now, again, diversify, you don't put everything in one silver, but one thing with silver, you generally expect to get, you know, like it's considered leveraged gold. So oftentimes silver will move basically at about a 1.4 or 1.5 ratio compared to gold, i.e. that means if gold's up 1%, on average silver will be up 1.5%. If gold's down 1%, and silver usually be down 1.5%. So generally you can hold a lesser amount and get the same exposure as you would in gold.
Well, I felt that silver, you know, somebody asked me the other day, and, you know, I'm a big fan of silver, and I own it, and, you know, and I own SIVR, and I own, you know, some physical. And, you know, somebody said to me, well, that they would trade the futures. I said, you know, I think for a long-term play, I like SIVR a lot better here, because I don't have to deal with the rolling over. I don't have to deal with, you know, the quick intraday moves. I mean, it happens, obviously, the ETF tracks the physical. But as you know, being in physicals, A, the leverage is so much higher, and it's much tougher to manipulate. And when you just hold a great ETF like the ones you guys cover, it's a little bit easier to withstand some of these moves back and forth.
Well, the only benefit to futures is you can use margins. So basically, you can put down 10% and hold a lot more silver than you have money for. So you can do that. That's one of the benefits. But overall, you have to roll those futures that expire. If you want to hold on for more than a month or so, you have to roll. And there's commission costs, expenses, bid-ask spread. It just gets complicated. And you have to have a futures account. And you just can't get much better than, you know, 30 basis points on a physically backed silver ETF, which we offer. And the big difference is there's only commodities you can do that in and actually hold the physical and have that direct exposure to the spot price is the precious metals. If you want to do that in crude oil, you just can't get that spot price because you have to use a future or some derivative or an ETF that tracks a future, and you're never going to get the spot price because it's going to roll those futures, and that's just, you and I coming from the pits knows that can get a little bit discombobulated. It's just not as straightforward as physically backed silver ETF.
It gets very dicey, and it's funny because just on crude oil here, you know, we're down here, you know, it's going to 30, it's whatever, you know, and maybe it'll go back to the 09 low, which was, I think, 32.79 or whatever it is. But I believe, you know, very similar to gold, that this short crude trade is getting very crowded, and at some point it will revert back, whether it's going lower. I don't know if it's going a lot lower, but I mean, I would much rather be a buyer here than a seller. Do you think crude is done, or do you think it's probably looking for some sort of a rally here?
I think what you said is we're spot on. You and I both have nailed crude before. We both thought it was bearish at 16. It just broke down. And now I think just what you said, I'd much rather be a buyer than a seller. And here's why. It's actually part of the reason I'm somewhat bullish on gold, because the low for crude oil in 2008, which was an extreme period, was about $34, $35 an ounce. a barrel. And so now we're at 40. Yeah, it's probably going to print the 30 handle. There's just not a lot of room. You know, certain levels, when you can play against a good support level like that, yeah, it might break in the short term. But it's just getting very low, very cheap. And as a trader, even as an investor, I'm more likely to look to buy some. So be honest with you, I'm actually looking to buy a little crude more for a trade. Question's how you do it. But the big difference is you have to use an ETF that tracks futures, and buy and hold is a big different story. So if you look at, you know, the most widely traded crude oil ETFs is USO. From what I hear from the people who run that ETF is the average holding time is 4 days. That makes sense. You don't want to buy and hold that because it rolls futures. And if you look at USO since the last, you know, since the end of 2009, it's down about 60%, but the spot price of crude oil is actually up. And that's because of the roll. That's one thing, big difference you'll never get in ETF. So always keep in mind, yeah, you and I both think a little more tactically. Yeah, crude oil is getting a little cheap. You certainly want to short it here. And it's also probably another reason gold's going to support, because crude oil has been dragging everything down. It's just at these levels, you're supposed to say thank you. Definitely don't want to be getting short here and looking to buy.
And to quote my good friend Mike McClone, sometimes you say thank you very much and you move on. And I think you sent out a great message today, Mr. McClone. You again, you're always the voice of reason. You don't panic. You don't get nervous. You're not getting, you know, the baby with the bathwater. You're not calling gold 2000 and, you know, it's for. I think it's great that you bring a great calm demeanor to the show, and we appreciate you on the Bubba Show.
Well, thanks for having me. I much appreciate it.
This has been my man, Mike McClone, ETF Securities. You got to check out, I'm telling you, look, they're the best ETFs for what we want to do, the precious metals, and they've got the basket of what Mike loves, which is glitter, is one of them as well. And I'm just telling you that if you want to get the squarest, the best shake on your ETF, ETF Securities is the place to go. Check it out. We have been with Mike McClone today. We've been hanging out with Mike McClone today, and this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org. a lot of good stuff going on. Markets are getting crazy. Make sure you're on top of it. We've got that new hedge program coming out, and I've got a special announcement coming out later this week. So I'm excited. Make sure you're here. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back tomorrow. Same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
I want to feel its way. I want to feel its way.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk Events.